Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. Today, we're going to take another virtual trip across the ocean, this time over to France, and talk a bit with Anne Robertson, who teaches people who are blind to use the Mac, among many other things. Anne, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. Please take a moment and introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Robert. I am English, as you can probably hear from my accent, and I've lived in France for nearly 30 years. I used to be a systems programmer on mainframe computers, Unisys computers. In those days, I didn't use a screen reader or anything, like that. I used an Opticon to read. So that's going back a bit. But anyway, for the past 4 years, I've had a website in French for French-speaking visually impaired Mac users, blind and partially sighted people, and a discussion list. So the website is cecimac.org, because the French word for blindness is cécité. So there's lots of blindness-related organizations and websites starting related to blindness. Ours is cécimac, and the forum cécimac is the discussion list, which has over 250 members. It's been going for 4 years, so it's really grown recently, especially since Lion and the introduction of voices in other languages without having to buy them. That's made a big difference.
So does that mean that the Mac is reasonably popular among blind people in France?
It's getting more and more so, yes.
Is it easy for people who are blind to get equipment like Macs and Apple devices in France?
For a few years now, we've had Apple stores. We didn't have any Apple stores till just a few years ago, but now there are several. They're all over the country, in fact. And of course, there's always been a lot of Apple resellers, so it's never been a difficult problem getting Macs. In fact, Macs have been popular in France for years amongst sighted people.
And obviously, with the accessibility provided by VoiceOver and the improvements that have been made in that area, just as Macs are becoming much more popular among people who are blind in the States, sounds like the same thing's happening in France.
You know, the iPhone has made such a difference.
Well, it does seem like an awful lot of people talk about it being a very natural progression to go from an iOS device to a Mac. It sounds like the same thing essentially is happening there.
When I started out with my list, you know, and website, we were the only ones out there. You know, it was the only website and list for visually impaired Mac users. And now it's really proliferating.
What kind of things do you have on your website?
We have an introductory page which just basically says that the Mac is for French-speaking visually impaired people, and then we have various pages with a few podcasts, not many, a lot of text-based articles, and a page linking to resources in other languages, such as other people's websites and lists.
So it's really a resource for people who, sounds like, want an introduction to working with the Mac and also some technical information.
Exactly. I mean, we have a page for beginners, which explains the basics of setting up your Mac, you know, if you can't see, and for low vision people, too.
Okay, so do you find that people tend to go to the website seeking information and then contact you for training? Is that kind of how it typically works?
So we offer training, but a few other people offer training informally. I mean, we're fully registered with, you know, my husband Archie's a teacher. He's officially a training body in his own right.
Okay.
We're quite official as far as that. If people can get their training paid for, they can be trained by us, because we're a recognized training organization.
And do people typically come to you for the training? Do you go to them, or how does that normally work?
A bit of both. Within the Paris region, we'll go to them if they want. But if people are coming from further away, they sometimes come and we offer them a residential course here. We You know, we have a spare room and private bathroom for them, and, you know, so we can, you know, cater for them. So, and often for someone who's totally blind coming from some distance for 2, 3, 4 days training, it's easier just to stay with us.
It sounds like one thing that you do is offer a pretty holistic approach to the training, in the sense that someone can actually come and stay with you, immerse themselves in the training for 2 or 3 or 4 days, and really have a chance to go home with a lot of knowledge that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
You know, some people just come for a day, some for half a day. It just depends what their needs are. Everyone's different, and we tailor the training to the person's needs.
So it's very customized. Are there certain things, obviously, that you find most people are wanting training on the Mac?
Sometimes, quite often really, they need training with iWork, like especially Pages. They need to be able to do proper layout and everything in Pages. So we do that. We do Pages training. We actually do that via Skype as well.
A lot of people in the U.S. talk about the Mac not really being a great office tool or productivity tool for people who are blind because of the lack of access to Microsoft Office. How do you find, in your experience, Pages as being a substitute for Microsoft Word? Do you find it adequate or not adequate, or what's it like in your experience?
Mostly it's adequate. It has a problem with tables, of course, but they're manageable. It's the text boxes that are the problem, and you can't track changes. I mean, the facility is there. It's just that if you can't see, you can't find where the changes have happened. You can find the page they've happened on, but not exactly where on the page.
If you're needing to, say, exchange a document with someone else and you're both working on it with VoiceOver, you can't really do the same approach to tracking those, it sounds like, that you can if you're a sighted person, because VoiceOver, I guess, doesn't provide you with all that information.
That's right. You can't jump to where the change has taken place. You can see what change has been made. It appears in the text box, but you can't see where. So it's very complicated, and it's, you know, it would waste so much time trying to work it.
To be honest, I'm really not sure how well monitoring track changes actually works with Microsoft Word on Windows screen readers. There may be some screen readers that work better with it than others, but I think in general that's a problem across the board, at least to some extent.
Yes, I think so. I mean, people have told me it's difficult. I've never managed to do it, so, you know, and I've never used a PC, so I've never. I used Word 5 long ago on OS 7, OS 8, you know. Back with Outspoken.
So,
but that was a long time ago, so yeah. I haven't used it.
So that was pre the Intel Macs, and that was
very much so. Yeah. Very much so. Yes.
Back when Outspoken was really the only, as far as I know, the only screen reader, the only accessibility that was available for the Mac. But apparently you could use Microsoft Word back then.
Yes, yes. And yes, indeed, Outspoken was the only screen reader.
So we've really made progress in a lot of ways, obviously, with VoiceOver and the tremendous access to most of the OS X applications and most of the operating system. But it sounds like certainly Microsoft Office, unfortunately, is one of those situations that we haven't made progress on. I'm thinking that's as much a Microsoft issue or more as it is an Apple issue, but it's still unfortunate because it would mean that for a lot of people, access to Office would make the suite of productivity tools maybe a little more complete on the Mac. At the same time, though, you know, it seems to me in some ways, at least here, that Microsoft Office is not the only options that people are using to create documents these days. I think that's starting to shift a little bit.
I think they're going to simpler layouts, and that'll make it easier altogether.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of people here are talking about how they create their documents, you know, in just in rich text format or just in plain text for that matter. Maybe using some sort of markdown language or using some other ways to mark the text, but that means you can access that data from an iOS device or from text edit on the Mac or in just multiple ways, and it's a lot more flexible for people.
It is, and text edit is great because all the VO commands work.
Yeah, I find myself, honestly, almost always using text edit as my word processor of choice, but I'm not in a position where I have to produce documents with lots of tables and strict formatting and headers and footers and all that. Most of my documents are pretty straightforward, but for that, text edit really seems to work very well.
It does. I like text edit. It's straightforward. I always, you know, when I write user guides or anything, I always use text edit.
Yeah.
It's easiest.
So have you developed a lot of materials, users guides, and things like that for people who are doing your training?
Quite a few. We've developed quite a bit of stuff on Pages. We have a five-part course on Pages, which we have in both English and French. And so there are materials for that. And that's quite complex. It includes, you know, things like doing flyers, where you've pasted pictures into things. So it's an explanation of how to calculate where the picture is.
If you have the document for working with Pages available in both English and French, is that something that could be made available to people in the US?
We do. I mean, we offer the training by Skype. If you give people the documentation and without making sure they're using it right, they can, you know, make a mess of it. Because if you can't see what you're doing on the screen, you can get things very fused. So we offer training by Skype with screen sharing so that my husband Archie, who can see
online,
he can, you know, do the screen sharing and see what the person is actually doing to make sure they're getting it right.
Okay, so if someone in the States or anywhere in the world, it sounds like, wanted to do this training in either English or French, they could work out an arrangement to do it with one of you on Skype and would have access to the documentation to refer back to, but it sounds like it's really part of a training package.
It's a training package, exactly. It's in five units. And we've had a few people do it. And it seems to work well for them.
So what would the contact information be, Anne, if someone wants to get in touch with you all and seek this training?
Well, it's all on the website anyway, but the email address is education@cecimac.org.
Excellent. So I would encourage anyone who especially sounds like is interested in getting more out of Pages to take a look at that website. Do you offer training in Numbers and the other parts of the suite as well, or just Pages?
Well, the thing that's formalized is Pages. We need to spend some time on putting together a package for Numbers. And we've taught someone Keynote. But Keynote is a difficult one. There are so many themes that you really need to do it tailor-made for the person's needs because, you know, different presentations are done in very different ways. So it depends what the presentations are like. And, of course, Keynote has this problem that as you're playing a presentation, VoiceOver will not read the slides. So you have to do plenty of work beforehand to convert the text to an audio file and attach it to each slide so that as you play the slides through, you can actually hear, you know, with an earpiece or whatever, you can hear what's actually on the slide.
Okay, so that is a bit of extra work, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's extra work. It works, but it's extra work.
At least it gives people a way to create presentations if they need to do that.
Well, that's right. Yes, it works. Yeah, absolutely.
Keynote would be a possibility, and certainly Pages is more formalized, and it sounds like people can look forward to a likelihood of something coming along in the future for Numbers.
Yes. Yes, I mean, we saw numbers, but numbers is a difficult one, because once you get a large spreadsheet, it's horrible. It is so slow. It's busy all the time.
I see. But if someone wants to use a fairly small spreadsheet just for some basic accounting or something, it would probably work pretty well.
It works. Lots of people manage to use it without any training.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear, because I don't really use either of those products, and I could if I had a need to do so, but that's good information for people to have, that you can use Keynote and Numbers at least to some degree, and it sounds like it's worth investigating if you're needing an alternative to PowerPoint and Excel.
Definitely.
So how did you get this idea or get started as a Mac trainer in France? How did it come about?
It was really quite accidental. I mean, I was just a Mac user from way back, and I just didn't want to change to anything else and couldn't afford the screen readers for PC anyway, and I didn't know how to use a PC. When Tiger came out, of course, it was all in English.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing I had to do was find something that would read French, because I'm a translator and I needed to read my originals in French. And I found a thing, first thing I found was a thing called Speechissimo, which with Speechissimo, you would, highlight a piece of text and then this application would read it. Okay, you could do play, pause, rewind, fast forward, basic, like tape recorder controls.
It would just basically read a section of text that you had edited, that you'd highlighted.
Yeah. And that's really what I did for the first year or so. And then I met at the Autonomique, which is a sort of disabled independent living exhibition that happens every 2 years in Paris. And so it must have been about 6 years ago, 2006, I met David Niemeyer of AssistiveWare, and he was demonstrating visuals. And VisioVoice actually did a localization of Tiger into French and Dutch.
Okay.
Because AssistiveWare is a Dutch company.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those AssistiveWare voices. They've really produced some excellent ones.
Aren't they great? Yeah, absolutely. The French ones are wonderful. Absolutely brilliant.
And they give you really complete access to OS X just the same way the English voices do. Isn't that correct?
Although you could have the OS in French, VoiceOver wasn't localized into French. So everything, all the strings involved in the VoiceOver speech were all in English.
Oh, that makes it a bit confusing.
So absolutely. VisioVoice did a localization into French. And so I met David Niemeyer at the Autonomique. And I was interested in his product. And so I started using it, and a few months later he made two videos of me using it, one in English, one in French. And that sparked some interest, because he put them on his site at AssistiveWare. And people found it, and then a few French people started using the Mac, French visually impaired people. And then when Leopard came out, Apple had localized the OS into French without French voices. So you needed the a cappella voices. Also, what came with the Leopard was Braille, but it was only US Braille.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Also, with Leopard, on installation, it was contracted Braille. It was grade 2. So I made a big fuss about this and said, look, this is totally insane to have grade 2 at installation. They must have listened, because by Snow Leopard, they pushed it into grade 1 Braille at installation.
So you kind of had two factors working against you there, the language barrier and the Braille barrier, it sounds like, when it was contracted.
So my husband, Archie, made French Braille tables. In fact, he did Braille tables for Leopard and Snow Leopard in quite a lot of different languages.
So that makes Braille a lot more comfortable, a lot more usable for people who are working in French. I gather that Braille is quite popular. I know it is in lots of other parts of Europe. I assume it is in France as well.
Yeah. Yes, but there's still people who never use it. But yes, generally speaking, it is popular. It ought to be. It was a Frenchman who invented it, actually.
Exactly. you're right. One of the things that has really concerned me a lot in the U.S. is there has been a decline of Braille usage, especially the teaching of Braille to children and so forth. And I think it's a real shame. I don't plan on getting on my soapbox here, but I just think Braille is the literary language, and without having exposure to that, children just don't get what they need in terms of sentence structure and spelling and punctuation and so forth.
I so agree with you, and it's the same here. It really does shock me, the terrible spelling of some people.
You know, it's just hard to understand if a sighted child was told, well, you don't really need to learn to read and write. You can just listen to the material on audio or with a speech synthesizer. Parents would never go for it. But I think, I don't know, maybe it's a combination of ignorance or lack of insight or something. But it's just a shame to me that we've allowed this to happen to the extent that we have. So I hope we're starting to realize the mistake that we've made and start turning that around in education. I see some evidence of that. One of the problems we have here, and I assume perhaps similar issues there, is that there has to be some way of getting the cost of Braille display devices down.
Oh, yes. That is a massive problem. Braille displays are a great thing because they do encourage literacy, Braille literacy. But on the other hand, the cost. It's scary, the cost.
I've been involved with electronic Braille for the last 35 years or so, and unfortunately, the cost really hasn't changed a whole lot.
No, I mean, I got a new Braille display only just over a year ago. And because I could get partial financing for it. So I had to prove a case, but having the website and everything was enough to make it legitimate for me to get funding. And I got about 75% funding towards my Braille display. And the one I got was a Brailleino, but it cost me €3,800. And then a euro is about, what, $1.20 or something? Right. Well, it's variable, of course, exchange rate. But, I mean, it's crazy. And that was one of the cheaper ones with input. Though the cheapest ones are done by Eurobraille. They make the ESIS ESIS Braille displays, and they have a 12-cell, 24-cell.
Yeah, I think it's really unfortunate in some ways that the way we've been able to get the cost down is by reducing the number of cells. And while I get it that a small display can be nice maybe for some brief work with your mobile phone or something, we need more cells if we're really going to enjoy the reading of Braille, the reading of literature and so forth. At least I do. I have a 32-cell display, which I like a lot, and I also have an 18-cell, and the 18-cell doesn't get used nearly as much.
I have two 20-cell displays, because I have my Brailleino, which is 20, and I have an old Packmate.
Uh-huh.
Just the display, which I bought second-hand in desperation, because I needed something working, you know, as a translator.
While we're on this topic, tell us a little bit, Anne, if you will, about what is available in France in terms of assistance, in terms of funding for people who are needing this kind of technology. What's it like for people trying to purchase these Braille devices and so forth?
In many ways, it's pretty good. Here, if you're blind, you're regarded as 100% disabled, so you get a monthly allowance, which is nearly €600. And once every 3 years, you can get funding for something like a Braille display or other assistive device that costs quite a lot. I think they pay. I think they will go up to about 3,000 euros. But that's only once every 3 years. Also, training. They will fund training to a certain extent.
Does that include the training that you provide? People can get some.
It's not bad.
People yes. can get some funding to help with that, it sounds like.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Sounds like it's a more formalized program that is across the board for people than what we have here.
Yes. I mean, sometimes you have to fight to get it because they're not going to tell you about it if you don't know.
I see.
It doesn't happen automatically. You have to fill in all the forms and jump through all the hoops. I'll tell you a funny story because someone like me who's totally blind with two artificial eyes, I still had to go to an ophthalmologist to get an official letter saying that I'm totally blind and it's never going to change.
Yeah, we have to do a similar thing here. It is funny, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's the way it is.
The ophthalmologist thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, at least you have one who's willing to provide the documentation. That's good.
Oh, yeah, but you say you have to do this.
Yeah, it is odd, isn't it, that it works like that. Again, it's a similar problem here. It's really people who have learned to advocate for themselves, people who are willing to go to the trouble to get the documentation and the paperwork completed. It's really those people who have the better chance of getting the training, getting the equipment that they need. And unfortunately, I'm sure that leaves a lot of people out.
Yes, there are organizations that help huge to get people to fill in the form. I mean, the AVH in Paris, the biggest organization for the blind in France, that they run schools and everything. They provide assistance if you need it, to fill in all the forms and to get everything, you know, as it should be.
So there are resources that can help people, and that's a good thing.
Oh, yes. Yes, there are plenty of resources.
You've mentioned a couple times that you work as a translator. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you get involved in that, or what does that involve?
I always wanted to be a translator. I did a degree in French. And I always wanted to work as a translator, but back in the 70s, they said to me, oh, you couldn't read all the background documentation. It's not possible, you know, couldn't get accepted for working as a translator. So I went into computer programming. But with the arrival of the internet and everything, it changed absolutely everything for me because it meant I had access to information.
So the university, I guess, this was in England, originally discouraged you from trying to work as a translator.
It was the RNIB, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, as it was then. They've changed it now to of blind people, I think, anyway. They're the big blindness organisation in Britain, and their careers officers all said, no way, not a chance.
Yeah, and that was a lot of the thinking back then. I had something similar happen to me in the mid-1970s when I was a university student here, when I got a degree in English, and the university told me you shouldn't bother to also get a teaching certificate because a blind person probably can't really manage a classroom. And that's just so different from the way thinking is today. No one would say that today because it's certainly been proven untrue, but also probably no one would tolerate statements like that. So the internet really helped make these documents available in formats that you can work with. Is that what happened?
It's access to background information on the subject matter.
I see.
You know, I often translate tourist brochures. So I have to get on Google and find out all about the places so that I don't make huge mistakes in the translation.
Okay, so you have to do background research.
Oh, you always do when you do translating. That's part of the job. And then you can point out mistakes as well if there's mistakes in the original. So, yeah, that's a big part of it.
Is that a lot of the work that you do, translation? I mean, is there a real demand for that?
There's a bit less. There's less at the moment. I think it's dropped off quite a bit. There used to be a lot more work, but now and again you get a big rush of work. You get a large document to do, you know, for instance, a tourist guide and a guidebook. So that's a lot of work at once. And that seems to be the way it comes. It comes in large batches, but quite sporadically.
So you sort of have to be flexible with your schedule.
That's right. But since I do both translating and teaching, you know, I don't work full time anymore. I work when there's work to be done.
Sounds like it's really nice that you can do a lot of that from home, and you don't have the transportation hassles and things like that.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I love it. I work as a translator, sitting in my armchair with my MacBook Air on my lap and my Braille display on a little table to my right. And it's very agreeable.
Tell us a little bit about you and whatever you want to say about what life is like for you in France outside of the work that you do. How is it living there?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Actually, the village we live in, it's like stepping back in time. You can walk down the middle of the road. There's so little traffic during the day. It's a lovely old village that's been here for over 1,000 years. It has a post office, 2 banks, a pharmacy, and we have trains every half hour into Paris. My guide dog just loves the forest. She can pick up half a tree and carry it around in her mouth. She's just happy like that. And, there's a farm in the middle of the village.
Sounds like a delightful place to live. And
it's a great place to live.
It's really the best of both worlds, it sounds like, given that you can easily take a train into Paris if you want the city. But if you don't want all that, you can enjoy the village.
Exactly. It is fantastic. Yeah, we do have the best of both worlds here. It's great. So, and I find the French very helpful. I think it's probably easy. I mean, I've never been without a guide dog here, so I don't know what it's like if you have a white stick. But for me, with a guide dog, when I go anywhere, if I'm lost, someone will always help. You know, the French love dogs anyway.
Just like here, I guess the dogs oftentimes will serve as a good icebreaker or introduction.
Oh, definitely. And also, the law here says guide dogs are allowed everywhere. No one can refuse you. So that makes life easier, much easier than Britain, because I visit Britain regularly because we have family there. And I take my dog, and there you always have to check everywhere you go, will they accept the guide dog? Whereas here, you don't have to worry. They're obliged to, and that's that.
Sounds like it's very different in terms of the rules and the way people view guide dogs just across the channel, huh?
Absolutely, because one day, about a year ago, we wanted to eat lunch in a Turkish restaurant in Paris. And it would just happen to be where we'd just been teaching someone for the morning, along with my husband. We were both together, and my guide dog, and we were there, and the guy, the restaurateur, tried to refuse us. We called the police, and the police sorted it out, and we ate there.
Excellent. It's really great to have that kind of support.
It is, and I wouldn't let it go, because I thought, well, some other blind person with a dog might want to eat here.
Nice to set that precedent or break that ground a little bit.
And I normally carry around with me, the no dogs except guide dogs stickers, in French, of course. And so I was able to give them one for the restaurant. So that's, you know, that's a really good thing here.
You grew up in England and at some point moved to France. Does that happen a lot? Do a lot of people make a move from England to France like that?
But it goes both ways. People in Europe move around quite a bit, I think. You know, we know a lot of other English-speaking people in France. Now, we didn't for a long time, but since Archie became an English teacher, he's met other native English speakers, be they British, American, Australian, whatever, because a lot of them are English teachers, so he comes across them. We didn't actually seek out other expats when we came. We came to live in France, which, you know, we just integrated. But yeah, there are quite a few people who move in all directions in Europe.
Did you just pick France because of your interest in French, or how did you get from England to France?
We'd had enough of England and the situation. We didn't like Margaret Thatcher, and she just got herself elected for the second time. So
for an
opportunity to escape. We'd already registered with an agency in Paris for computer programmers. So we got an opportunity to come to France, and we just took it. Okay.
It's nice to have that kind of flexibility and have those options. It sounds like where you were able to find a lifestyle that it feels like has turned out really great for you.
Oh, it suits us perfectly. I mean, we just love it here. I mean, we both speak the language fluently, so there's no problem of communications. Got lots of friends. You know, we like the lifestyle. We love the food, of course.
Oh, of course.
And the wine. One of the deciding factors when we bought this house was the fact that it has a vaulted wine cellar.
So, oh, nice.
We had somewhere to put our wine and made good use of it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it sounds like really one of the things that you have realized for you, and I think it's true for all of us in a lot of ways, you have, over the years, been quite adaptable. You found ways to, when it didn't seem obvious at first that you were going to be able to work as a translator, you went into computer programming, and when you found that you could live a lifestyle that you would enjoy more and benefit more from, you made the move from England to France. And so it seems like that willingness and that ability to be adaptable has been really important to you.
Definitely. I think being adaptable is absolutely essential if you're going to survive. You know, things that, when you think how things have changed, even in our lifetimes, it's unbelievable. I look at the iPhone, I think, this thing is magic. You know, you'd never have believed this was possible when we were growing up.
No, my wife talks a lot about how she's a real big movie fan, a real fan of film, and when she was a kid, you know, she dreamed of having some sort of projector with some movies, and now she's got all these movies at her fingertips, you know, streaming and on DVD and every other way, and it's just like, wow, the world has changed, and certainly even more so in some ways for those of us who are blind. I remember there was a time as a kid when I couldn't find enough material to read, and now there's more out there on the internet than I can read in a lifetime.
Exactly. And I just love being able to buy a book when it's just come out and read it, you know, an ebook.
So tell us a little bit about the ebook situation where you are in France. How accessible are they, and where do you get them and things like that?
We have, of course, the iBooks, so, you know, whatever, but it's limited for English language, because of course it's for the French markets. So I buy my books from Kobo.
Kobo is a Canadian company,
yeah,
right?
They are reasonably priced, and I can read them on the iPhone or on the Mac, so that suits me.
And how do you go about doing that? Do you go to a website? How does Kobo work?
Yeah, you go to the website, and you have the Kobo app on the iPhone. Otherwise, on the Mac, it's Adobe Digital Editions Preview.
Okay. So you use Adobe Edition to open and read them on the Mac, and you use the Kobo app on the iOS devices.
Yeah, and they just appear in my Kobo library on my iPhone when I've bought them. And Kobo is very, very, you can read, you know, you can navigate properly through them. So you can, if you want to check on the spelling of a name or something, you'll back find it and, you know, navigate as you would normally on the iPhone.
So Kobo may be a resource that people all over the world would want to check out.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I've bought all kinds of books from there. Of course, you've got the problem you've always got with ebooks, which is anything that's graphic is not, you know, is not readable.
What format are the books in? Are they PDF or EPUB or what?
EPUB with DRM.
EPUB with DRM.
Yeah.
Yeah. But fortunately, the app allows access to the protected material, it sounds like.
Exactly. The Kobo app reads the Kobo books, and Adobe Digital Editions Preview it's okay with that DRM.
Can you give the Kobo URL for people who might want to check it out?
It's just it's kobobooks.com, kobobooks.com.
Great. I think that's a resource that is very interesting, but I don't hear people in the U.S. talking much about Kobo, so I'm glad we took a minute to mention it.
It's funny. I mean, I've mentioned it quite a few times on the iPhone list because, you know, I love Kobo. I'm using it all the time. And I've been so impressed at the books I've been able to get, as I didn't expect to be able to get from it, because I have a thing about books on nutrition, particularly low-carb, high-fat nutrition. And I've managed to get lots of books there. I mean, just as soon as they've come out.
Yeah, isn't it really great to be able to get materials on whatever you want, whatever you need, and to be able to read them and not have to wait for them to be transcribed into Braille or put into some format that can take years for that to happen.
Exactly, and I'm sure most of these books wouldn't appear in Braille.
It's frustrating to me that there's such limited access at this point to the Amazon Kindle library.
Oh, I think makes me so cross.
Yeah, I think that's a tremendous resource of information. It's just a crying shame that Amazon hasn't done something about that.
Exactly. And I find that Kobo has most of the books. You know, it's rare that I come across a book I can't get.
Excellent. Well, that's good for people to know that Kobo is a good, at least for now, substitute for Amazon, it sounds like.
And they're reasonable prices.
Well, and we are getting to the point where we probably need to begin to say goodbye here and bring this podcast to a close. It's been really delightful having you on the podcast. Thank you for taking your time to come on and let the Tech Doctor audience know a bit about you and a bit about your life in France and how things work there. It's great to hear that there are people like you promoting the Apple products, the Mac and the iOS devices, and teaching people to use them. I'm really excited to learn about all that, and thank you for sharing some of that with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
For now, I'll just say so long from the Tech Doctor. If you want to get in touch with me, as always, feel free to email techdoctor123@gmail.com. Till next time, you all take care.